Hi friends, we are going to start with chapter 5 on marketing mix research. This chapter is essentially supposed to give you idea about certain fundamental ways of doing research, certain type of research which are specifically linked to marketing mix, four marketing mix as you probably recall. We will try to see how this helps you ultimately make an effective business plan. So marketing mix research essentially you have to understand that there are types of research which has been designed to specifically satisfy the demand of marketeers when it comes to marketing mix. You know marketing mix, there are four P's of marketing mix, and this kind of a research helps you to answer some of the questions like how, when, where, price related sensitivity, elasticity as they say, promotions and all this kind of a thing. Yeah. So what are those four research stages, Yane? That one need to really understand. Research stages, when you say it has to have a proper purpose, it has to have a population, procedure and a publication. So we will study them one by one. Essentially for purpose, when you say purpose is nothing but what is it this research is all about? What are the hypothesis, what is that research problem, management dilemma, management problem converted to research problem, and then the research hypothesis. So all these things like the objective that you set, etc., is covered under what you call purpose. Then comes the population. So like what is the frame of your population? One need to really understand this, yani, in the sense, where am I looking at, yani? Whom am I going to contact, etc. So if I have to give you a clear idea, when I say this, purpose, like, I will give you example straight away. So take an automotive manufacturers. Today you would have noticed that they come out with so many variants. Yeah. So is there a hypothesis like the more the variants, more the sale? So if that is a hypothesis, yeah, that is the purpose. And yeah, the research problem could be, will the making of more variants, in the car help me get more sale? So this being the research problem, the hypothesis is like more the variants, more the sale. Now, having done that, the population that you try to, focus is like you have to do some primary research. And then if you look at maybe India's the total population of the car today is like around, say, like 10 million. Now, in that, if I decide that I need to meet the hatchback people, then hatchback is about 35%. And in that, then if I decide that specific types of hatchbacks, say my overall population, this thing may come to, say, 5 lakh numbers. Now, from this 5 lakh numbers, am I going to meet all of them? No. I'm going to draw a sample plan. So, I'm going to decide who's my sample. Sample, you need the number, etc. So, these 2 points covers essentially that area. The procedure is about the data collection. Secondary data collection, we have understood, which is more an internal and certain other publications. External secondary data, we have understood, are various published sources. If suppose both of these do not give you the required results, you move on to do a primary research. So primary research, again, quanti, quali methods, and then we have studied various ways to collect data. So this essentially means that the procedure stage. And finally, the publication is like you publish what is analyzed. You publish what is inference coming out of your analysis. So we have covered like 4 stages of research. Essentially, please understand, these 4 points are very critical. They hold good in any stages of the research also. There are 6 steps of marketing research. At every stage, you can ask probably these 4 questions. So that's one important aspect that one need to understand. And this is the most important aspect of any marketing mix research. So marketing mix research, when you go on to do that, as we understand, we are going to understand more. These 4 aspects are always in front of any marketeers. So let's understand what are the types of marketing mix research that you have. So one is the product related research. Product related research has to everything to do with the product. It starts with the simplest question like, will my concept of this product work? Move on to like actually testing the product, move on to do how this product will fit into my brand strategy, etc. It has to do with packaging and a lot more. And pricing is about all elasticity of my product's price and then its impact on my demand vis-a-vis competitive market, etc. So will it get me the required numbers and all? So that's on pricing this thing. As we move forward, you then have the distribution research. It has to do with deciding the best place, deciding where your distributor should be so that you economize on your various other overheads, etc. the right channel that is good for you, for your product to reach your final consumers, and that's all this thing in sync with your supply chain, etc. So that's the distribution research that one need to understand can help. And then there is a promotional research. So promotional research against the what attracts my people, what is an offer nature that will trigger the call for action, what are they sensitive about, yani, what they like, what they dislike about my offers, etc. So all those aspects vis-a-vis the media also, it covers the media aspect of how the promotions are looked at in various medias, yani, how the media can contribute, what is it that media can do your difference to your marketing promotion, etc. So that's the area it tries to cover. So we have covered 4 P's of marketing, various kinds of research under that. Best is to actually move on to the understanding of the various methods available to you, that marketing mix research available to you. So what we are now at is a concept testing phase of our research. So this is one of the method of marketing research. Now when you say that, what does it do, Yana? The concept testing test the concept first, yani. So that's what the essence of the entire concept testing. It helps you to go, no-go kind of a decisions. It can be done at an idea stage itself, or it can be done while product is manufactured in a rough state, etc. So various ways there are to conduct this concept testing. Essentially, the word suggests that you understand whether your this idea or the product made out of this idea will be acceptable by the consumers en masse. Yani. So that's the essence of this. Yani. There are procedures which is what one need to really understand, but it is not so critical. It's like basically you define your purpose. Why are you doing this concept testing? The survey formats we have studied by now, so many formats or methods of available to you. There is Quanti, Quali. Under that we have studied the subsets. Subset in the methods of data collection, communicate the concept. Now, when you are doing this research, what is essential is like you have to, in a proper manner, tell the respondent what the concept is, and based on that, what the reactions are being studied. If it's a quantitative, you will get a quantitative idea. If it's a qualitative type of a research you've done, you will get some indicators whether this concept is working in the minds of your consumers, etc. So interpretation of the result, and then you finally decide, the presentation will decide whether you should go ahead with this concept or not. So utility this particular type of a methodology offers is like you are able to, if you have a multiple options of a concept, you are able to determine which is the best concept to move forward, invest your time and money in, likely marketing mix. Yani. So there are, as you know, that if you are trying to attract more segments of the market, your target market is more than one, or it is not a homogeneous this thing, then you have to develop different marketing mix. So concept testing also helps you. Like if you do the concept testing, which covers some of the 4 P's of marketing mix, then you are able to develop an appropriate marketing mix. Crystallize the idea. Mere thought or an idea or a concept is converted into a actual product, which is going to differentiate you in the market, generate alternative revenue streams for you. Benchmarking, that's one of the important aspect of concept testing. There are organizations who do time and again various very thoughtful advanced concepts ahead of its time, as they say, and then they do this concept testing over a period to know at what threshold level they find the acceptance to be of a level where that, you know, that productionization and marketing of that product can be considered, that idea can be converted into a concept. You can benchmark it against a competitive product, etc. And so these are some of the other advantage of or the utility of concept testing. Consumer's attitude towards the product. Yeah. So when you introduce a concept and when you observe things very well, or when you probe things very well, you will come to know their attitude towards the products. Many times what happens, they think it is definitely a need of an hour, but they are apprehensive because of a social nature. So when say, like, for example, concept testing of pregnancy pills were done, yani, people or the mothers or the parents were expressing an anguish, and they were expressing a need for having such kind of this thing, if science or the medicines world can offer that. But the other part was like they were little apprehensive whether should that be openly discussed? Should it be openly promoted, etc.? So these are some of the things which will come out of it, friends. How do you actually do the concept testing? So it's like a, it's a any approach of a data marketing research is suitable. Quanti or Qali can be done in a quantitative approach if you choose to. For certain concepts, you may need that. These are some of the things, Yane, that one need to be really. It is offered in a three different categories. The quantitative research under the concept testing are classified. I will say the essence of it or the classification of it is that the first nature could be the concept evaluation in itself. It is an evaluation of an idea where you are trying to see that whether the idea can be converted into a product or not, and will it have the acceptability in the market. Second is the positioning. Okay, you are very sure about, you have developed the product, you know, you may not have done the required concept testing, etc. But now having done this and this being the new product either in the market, new product in your product line, etc. You want to understand what should be the positioning perspective. So from that perspective, you do a positioning nature of a concept testing. You try to develop some alternative positions and try to feed that and then try to receive the consumer's feedback on that. Concept of the product tests in itself, where first the concept is developed and it is discussed and evaluated, post which the product is also developed and then it is tested and evaluated. The difference between the two are monitored for your final decision making. Concept very good, accepted very well, product not so good, then you can probably do the product improvements better. Concept not so well accepted, but the product is getting accepted, maybe you take a cautious call. So that's the area. So the characteristics of your concept testing can be one of this three. Problems associated with concept testings, like as you know, like every theory or every method has certain limitations. What happens in this case is like during the analysis stage, though the efforts are made to concentrate on all the respondents in the total target group, it is not necessary that every consumer will become the brand user. So it's typical of any other, you know, nature of a marketing research. We do marketing research on a simple sample. And the sample is supposed to be extrapolating what comes out of the research finding on the population. It says the same thing, that, you know, the idea that is promoted by the few people may not be that great when it is entered in the market. And sometimes the respondent used for sampling or a consumer evaluation may not have the real world experience. Like, it's like they have given you a feedback, they themselves have not experienced the product. So that's the gap. Yeah. So how do you determine the feedback and the reality is a question. So that's a limitation. So we have covered, friends, so far what is concept testing, method number one of marketing mix. So this is one type of a marketing mix overall under the product as a category. So then we move on to what you call brand equity research. Brand equity research, as the name suggests, it's to do with your equity of the brand. So brand positioning is something else, but it has to do with the equity of your brand. Equity is a long-term phase that your brand has invested in to acquire the customer confidence. Consumers are now trusting you, consumers believe you, consumers relate with you, etc. So that's the level that you achieve. Now that's a very critical aspect that the marketeers always want to know. Where does his brand stand in terms of the brand equity? And that equity facilitates either you're introducing other products under some common brand, etc. So you see that brand portfolio growing, and the Gillette razor, Gillette shaving cream, Gillette aftershave, etc. Because the brand Gillette is so strong, so that's the equity, and anything coming from that family, consumers are able to relate very well. They are able to understand what that is for a man as such, and that's the power of that brand equity. Now, that being the power, every brand marketeers want to know where do they stand and where will this concept be linked with. Can this concept add to the equity building, or will it have questionable entity, etc. So a brand equity research are of generally two nature: brand image and brand equity research itself. So because before equity, the image as an issue comes in. So image research has four important aspects: brand recognition, brand preference, brand loyalty, and brand awareness. So when I say that the image research can be any one of this, they may either do all the four aspects being probed, or it could be any one of that. Brand equity research has two essentials. Like, so when you do the brand equity research, there are two areas that it tries to probe: is the profiling of the brand vis-a-vis the conversion model. We are probably going to study this as we move forward. The core measure here, that is what one need to really understand. The core measure here are, it's like cognizance, whether this is known in the market, whether people relate with this. Awareness is whether it is known in the market. Usage is how deep, how unaltered the usage pattern about your brand is, whether it is easily switched, whether people prefer to only use it, or are there alternative available to consumers, etc. So everything to do with the usage, and finally the loyalty. Like, it's a bigger challenge. Loyalty is tested in many ways. So in the situation where brand is not available, in the situation where brand is price inelastic, in the situation where brand damage has happened, some incidents has happened. So like, for example, in our era, the Cadbury issue, and similar Maggie, I think you all will know Nestle's Maggie. Despite that, they have bounced back. So that's the trust of your taste of your loyalty, so to say. So friends, moving ahead, what I'm trying to make you understand are the two major essentials: brand profiling and conversion model. So we come to that brand equity as a model, but I think I would like to go back and help you to get little better idea about the four above under the brand image research. Brand recognition, as you know, how people are able to recognize my brand, whether it's a unaided recall, whether there is an added recall. So like when you ask a consumer which is a toothpaste brand comes to your mind, now what brand name that is, does it take, whether your brand features in that, or then later on you show them various ads or the name, and then it tells you, oh yeah, I'm also aware about this, etc. So that's the level. There are methods to understand this. Brand preferences, given a choice for the nature of need, what are the preferences? So which is the one first preferred, which is alternatively preferred brands, etc. Loyalty is like situational, caselet based, or you know, scenario based understanding, where consumers are made to understand what they face, etc., and then they will expect the response, and the response is analyzed to determine your loyalty. Loyalty, again, it's not necessarily caselet and situation based. It's like you try to understand how frequently the person has been using, how long it has been used. So it depends on what part of loyalty that you are trying to understand for yourself during your brand image research as such. Brand awareness, as I said, is like simple awareness, whether my brand has been known. There are brands who have achieved a generic proportion. So like you go to a shop and you say, ke bhaiya bisleri dena. So you will not go and say, ke bhaiya mineral water dena. So when you are offered even at that point of time an alternative brand, you still take it and go away. So it's like an awareness that your brand has achieved over a period of time. So now let's study the two major essentials of the brand equity research: profiling. So profiling is nothing but how do you really understand about your brand and your competitor. This is the study which helps you to measure yourself vis-a-vis your competitors. Now here, overall there are core indicators are static between the two comparisons. Attributes or the factors may vary. So I may do a profiling of my vehicle, say Mahindra may do a profiling of his vehicle with Renault. And then in that case, the factors that can remain static are the security features, or you know, drivability, so that kind of a thing, safety and all. To this, customers are asked to indicate what do they feel about that this particular brand, and what do they feel about the other brand. That will emerge the profile, how the brand is looked upon as. So that's the brand profiling. Conversion model, this model makes the estimation of the degree of strength and weakness an organization has vis-a-vis the competition. So here it is how easy or difficult it is for the consumers to keep using your product or switch it to the next level. So now, as they say in automobile industry, the loyalty has been lost. So the biggest challenge that automobile manufacturers today face is about the loyalty. Once upon a time in the past, a particular model entered a house, even the next generation used to believe it. Now today the next generation is all different kind of aspirations and choices. So that's the trend that is happening. So very critical for organizations to understand the conversion model in terms of their brand equity. So brand equity for this kind of research will give them the idea as to how sticky your brand is as a loyalty or an equity aspect. Now the moment you know that that aspect is deteriorating, you know that what all other aspects that you need to build upon so that the brand remains in the family, brand remains with the customer, etc. So brand now, so therefore we now come to a new type of method. So prior to that, let me just summarize. We have done what is the concept testing, and then we have understood what is the brand equity research. Now we come to the brand name testing, which is a third nature of marketing mix research. It's important because a brand name has a recall. Mujhe Bisleri dena, or like people in the market will go and say, bhai SKF bearing dena. You know, that kind of a thing. Bourbon dena. Now that Britannia Bourbon ke badle, Bourbon has become a very common this thing. And now whether you are offered which company's Bourbon, that becomes a secondary issue. So that's what is that name has to do with. It helps the consumers to know what exactly he wants. He helps the consumers to articulate what is he looking at, etc. Therefore, the name testing is a very critical aspect. It creates a preference for your brand based on the likes and dislikes and you know attitude of consumers towards that. A name has everything to do with what will it connote to the consumers when it is spelled out. I will just take a simple example wherein say if I have to tell you how misinterpreted the Shabab as a word in our this thing. Shabab, when you say in Urdu, its origin is in Urdu, and Urdu says the different colors of happiness. But when you are interpreting in Hindi or when in our normal colloquial this thing is, it is a connotation linked to being sexy. So if similarly you choose a brand name which in a regular life has a different connotations, then you may tend to have a problem. Companies have an attitude to adopt a foreign brand, but again when you adopt some foreign name, you must see that whether it is universally being accepted. Otherwise, there are certain words which is considered good in certain part of the world, but not so considered good in the other part of the world. So that and similar such aspects are the coverage of your brand name research, where you try to find out ease of recall, connect, the connotation that the brand word brings out, etc. Will it help you to create a buzz or the awareness? Will this name remain in the mind of the consumers, etc.? So that's the essence of what is brand name testing. It impacts the factors like brand names are emotional bonding power. Will this create an emotional bonding? So that's what brand name testing has to understand. It is to go in the minds of the consumer, as they say. Memorizing, is it easy to memorize? If there are different this thing, you have seen this, Volkswagen in India has to carry out a detailed advertisement to make people rightly pronounce the organization's name. Even today, for example, Piaggio, which is a very popular Italian scooter and three-wheeler brand, they have a three-wheeler brand called Ape. But in the market, when we speak to the consumers, the actual three-wheeler users, Ape and Ape and what all kind of this thing comes in, or some funny name as the people say. So that's what is the critical idea, memorability. And that is what it should try and understand. Latent associations, is there something hidden in the mind where this goes and gets associated with? I gave you that Shabab example. It is something of that nature. So if this name goes and attach it to some negativity within the mind frame of the consumer, then you have to be better careful about it. Fit to the concept. So one should also try and see whether the product that it is bringing it out essential characteristics of the product and the name, whether it fits to that. Yani, name itself, as they say, should connect, you know, the youthfulness, the connect the power of the product very simply. Ability to pronounce, and as I have said, it should be able to pronounce well. Yani, that's why I gave you this example of Piaggio Ape and Volkswagen. Resonant, yani, after being promoted, when you get into the silence mode, your shout and your various other aspects close, and you try to, you know, have a smooth sailing or sales cycle to continue. And now, during those days, whether this brand will continue to resonate in the mind of your consumers, not only that, probably the growth stage, the falling stage, etc. At this stage, whether the brand resonance or not is there, that is very critical. Yani, it will, therefore, it may help you at any point of time to bounce back. But if the brand loses that power, then you have a challenge of different nature in the market. So, brand name testing is all about such aspects as we have covered. Five best brand name research practices are, in very simple term, I'll say, okay, this is not so critical as such, but it's like, do not rely only on the focus group. Once upon a time, FGD was something, and because it did not reveal, it may not reveal everything that we earlier discussed about. Emotional feedback is critical. So try and get more an emotional output from the respondent. Look for quality. So first shortlist few powerful names and then do research. So there may not be any shortcut to brand name determination. So look for quality. So always gun for better understanding of what comes out of few names that you are proposing, etc. Testing with the right audience is must, very critical, as you all understand. And use latest research techniques. So do not hesitate due to cost and various other reasons. Do not go away or do not continue to use old methods. Try to use the new methods, because in the digital world, again, people refer to the brand and connect with the brand differently. There, the engagement is a power. So these are some of the aspects that one need to really know are the research practice to derive a better brand name for your product. So we have covered one more methods. Now we come to what you call an eye tracking. It's again a very powerful tool that helps the researchers to really know psychological, behavioral aspects of consumers towards your product. So eye tracking, as it says, the technique is determines by looking at the person and the looking at movement of his eyes. Yani. So what does he notice? What does he like? Where his eyes have stabilized longer, etc. So all this can be used in while reading, pictorial impact, the word, the brand logo, what does it attract, the offer. So as you see that any communication, marketing communication has these aspects. So there is a product or a model with the product, there is a title, there is a text, there is an offer, there are introductory features, etc. Now, eye tracking, when you probably practice, it will tell you, okay, where does customer look, where does customer does not look, you know, how long his attention span is towards that. Leave the advertisement, look at the shops. Yani. So, presume that there is a camera behind every product shelves. Now, when you go to a shelf, you look at, you know, top to bottom, you look at some place little longer. So, it is like they try to understand from there as to how the packaging is attracting your attention, or whether the offer put there has attracted your attention, or whether the brand name itself, its ongoing TV commercial has led to your getting the better attention, etc. So these are some of the advantages of what you call eye tracking research. Consumers are presented with the stimuli. Also, even that can happen. So like websites, newspapers, etc., or your communication and all. You provide a stimuli and then you are monitoring the eye tracking through that, whether it's a video or whether it's a hidden camera or whatever, where you try to see that his eyes are rolling which side, where it is stabilized, where it has stayed longer than the other area. So that itself will give you a better understanding. This interpretation of graphical, this thing, etc., drives, helps you to determine the fixation. So whether visual pattern is more fixing, stare, the blinks, etc. So what is it happening while consumer is attending to your creative? That will help you to understand should your creative require more, you know, relook. Many times in during my also research, you know, my study days or my marketing days, or there was a trend to use a very sexy, appealing female models, yani. And then we often used to come out and question ourselves whether consumers have remembered her more or my product more, yani. So this and similar such aspects, you know, there will be a lot of revealing aspects which will come in your research when you do eye tracking. Helps in understanding the impact of, say, like packaging, placement of the product in a store. So therefore, a lot of investment is happening on effective store displays, etc. All this, what you see that malls and, you know, DMarts and Shopper Stops, etc., they all have to understand this and then accordingly arrange and display the product in sync with the product manufacturers, etc. Spontaneous reactions, behaviors, dislikes, or how they go and test the product, etc. Various things will emerge. And even today in an online medium, this is useful. I'm not getting into the technicality of how the online medium, but yes, if done it effectively, the people will be able to monitor what you do while you are online, you know, doing various kind of things. You may be part of the panel, you may not be aware about that, you know, your this thing has been observed or looked upon, etc. So that's the way the eye tracking works as such. Four dimensions are generally covered, yani. So it's a noticeability, visual engagement, area of attention, visual appeal, and self-reported susceptibility to purchase. So these are the points which one need to really see, that you try to derive about your communication. So whether it is noticed well, yani. So how does the product notice versus the offer notice, etc. Visual engagement, is it people are just ignoring your display ad, or people are noticing it, you know, are they paying required attention to it, yani. Area of attention, so which part of your communication is being attended more. Visual appeal, whether it is standing out in the clutter. So that's also important. And then self-reported susceptibility to purchase. Yani. So does it help? So this aspect is more important in packaging design, etc. So whether the packaging design itself and what has been communicated, etc., is pushing the consumer for that final call of action, whether a purchase or whether calling your helpline or making a missed call. Today that's a trend. Yani. So that you will get a call back and people will answer your inquiry. So that's the eye tracking. Now what we come to is the correspondence analysis. Correspondence analysis, as the name suggests, something which is corresponding to the other, yani. Frequently involved in categorical data, correspondence analysis characterizes the association between the levels of two or more categorical variables by performing weighted principal component analysis, yani. So friends, what actually I'm trying to tell you is that this research will help you to know between two distinct entity what is corresponding well with each other. So you are trying to figure out, yani, what is relating with your product or your concept or your, you know, communication, etc., well, vis-a-vis what corresponds well with the other product, other features, other communication, etc. Result of this correspondence analysis is a two-dimensional graphical representation of an association between the rows and columns of the table. So there are every two aspects are when compared between the product, it will create what you call a correspondence analysis chart, which has a two-dimensional upper, you know, up arrow and side arrow, and then what you get four quadrants, and this will try and, you know, try and put it and have that understanding of what corresponds better for this particular product or a service that you are offering. Same is the case with your competition that you can do. So we are understanding correspondence analysis. There is simple correspondence analysis and there is a multiple correspondence analysis. Simple uses column and row variable one each. And security being or the safety of the car, then you have issues like lock, the windshield, the, you know, other aspects of this thing. Now whatever the value that has been given, correspondence analysis will try to plot each against one. Multiple is like column is taken. So against security, all these points which are there, and what is it, the attributes rating that has been given, and this is plotted so that you get an idea as to what is where, yani in terms of consumer's mind. It helps you to answer some of these following questions about the customers, you know, alternative customers, products, is there a need for a new product, etc. So that's the advantage of that model. Discrete choice modeling, you have understood, said like conjoint analysis, which is another theory or the research approach, as they say, in which what happens, the consumer ranks different combination of attribute labels. So consumers in conjoint analysis are presented with various combination in which there are certain attributes are given. Now consumer chooses one particular combination. In the discrete choice modeling, consumer has to choose only one combination, and that combination means he has to pick and choose various attributes and make it as a one combination. Both this has its own nature of advantage. So right method is used for the right set of product research, automobile companies, or for the kind of a product which every time strives to add new features, you know, that kind of organizations for their product uses this kind of research methods for the marketing mix. Discrete choice modeling, the set of attribute level combinations is called as a choice set, as they say. Each consumer may be asked to choose one combination from each of the several sets given to them in attributes of the product that defines what is it called as a choice attributes. It distinguishes them from the other attributes. So this is what is a choice set. What is frequently emerging will become your preferred solutions as we get into, say, product development language. So that's the discrete choice modeling. Some of the questions that it can answer is, like, for example, if you want to include the demographic variables, then in the demographic variables, when you include that, then which combination of the attribute level is most likely to be chosen by the consumers? Which combination of attributes consumers will probably not choose? What are the probability of my product being chosen by the consumers? So these are the ways that the discrete choice modeling can help marketeers. So now we come to very important methods of marketing mix research, is a multi-dimensional scaling. As the name itself suggests, it is something which is plotted on a multiple dimension. So more than two dimension is a multi-dimensional scaling, as they say. Product, what is critical in this that you need to know is, when you discuss the similarity, then there are certain aspects of brand similarity come out. So this is a model also helps you to evaluate your product vis-a-vis the competition on a similar aspects. So taste, price, quality, you know, safety, security, so convenience, comfort. So these are some of the parameter. As they say, the model depends on the similarity. But in the similarity, it tries to distinguish by getting into the rating of it, or by giving it a numerical value, which is when plotted on the graph, creates a three-dimensional graph. And in that, you come to know that when it comes to safety or a taste of your product, where do you stand? Price, where do you stand? Quality, where do you stand vis-a-vis other brands? So that's the multi-dimensional scaling. Very important, as you know, have to determine. It studies the similarity, but this statement is so powerful. In other words, it can also study the dissimilarity between the various competing product on certain attributes, as they say, creating a three-dimensional graph. Three-dimensional graph will reveal to you as to how different consumers see my product, or what the similarity is my product vis-a-vis the competing product, etc. It's a model where visualization helps you to find what are the gaps that you should strive for, or what should you minimize. So there is a distance from certain points that reveals that whether you are closer to consumer or you are away from consumer's requirement. Now, if that is the case, by studying those aspects, you try to minimize and you get closer and closer to your consumers over a period of time on, say, test. Suppose if you are not rated very good in the test, of your product, then you try to improvise, you bring more flavor, you try to bring more combination of different tastes. Something might click, so then you diminish your other taste options available to consumers, and then you try and become more and more preferred taste this thing. So this is how the multi-dimensional scaling will add value to marketing research people. Yeah. It's a technique based on assumption that the people perceive various brands on certain common sets. Yeah. So that's the fundamental belief of this research technique. So obviously, like I as a consumer, when I say shaving cream, I evaluate the various brands on the foaming that it gives it. And then I evaluate on the flavor or the kind of, you know, feeling that it excites me, etc. So this is what multidimensional scaling brings it out, rather than hypothetically asking me various aspects. And so on a similarity or on a dissimilarity aspects, it compares various brands. Significance of this is that identification of attributes on the basis of which the consumers will evaluate me. So what are the attributes on which you are getting evaluated? Enables the positioning. It's a very powerful tool to determine the positioning. Where there is a gap in the minds of your consumers, can you take that gap and then acquire that gap for a longer period of time? It creates that, therefore, the perceptual map, which gives you an idea as to how people figure out various brands vis-a-vis your brand. It will help you to therefore develop the right positioning for yourself.